Hi, my name is Michael Creamer, and welcome to another in a series of podcasts that we're doing. This one is going to be focused on the global and very, very topical logistics and warehouse market. And today we're going to focus on what is happening in India, which is obviously a major market in the world, and there's lots of interesting things happening. To do this, I've got three experts on air with me, and they're going to be talking not only about what's going on in India, but the geopolitical challenges that the country is facing, which have a big impact on the sector, and also what we think is going to happen over the next 5 years, and what is, for everyone, a really fascinating part of the world for both owners of property in India and also the occupiers. I have with me two people from Cushman & Wakefield. Firstly, Rob Hall, who's an international partner in the European business and head of our industrial and logistics for Cushman & Wakefield. And Vivek Dahia, who's from India, managing director and runs our logistics and industrial business there. And then to sort of round that out and to offset what they're going to talk about, we have Deepak Pawar, who's the chairman of the Pawar Group, and he'll introduce himself when he jumps in. But maybe to start with, I could ask you, Rob, to give us a little bit about what we might call, what is the India story? What is going on? How does it fit into a sort of the global context of the work that you're doing?
Thanks, Michael, and hello to everybody. India is just a real world of contradictions, and at times, from an external perspective, it can be difficult to make sense of. There are so many attributes to India. And if you're a multinational looking at India, the population size, second biggest in the world, what's of real attraction is the average age of its population, which is 30. You compare that, Michael, to where we sit here in Europe, where the average age is 43, and half that population are under 24. So you've got a tremendous sort of market from a consumer perspective, but also a workforce perspective. So from an external viewpoint, the demographics of India are really tremendous. You often hear about India, about the infrastructure as a challenge, but you look at the money that India is looking to spend on infrastructure, that it's just astounding numbers. $1.5 trillion over the next 5 years on its infrastructure. A significant number of billions of dollars on their port expansion and special economic zones. So all of those elements, it really, really does have in its favour. You then look at FDI, foreign direct investment, and there is significant money going into India, but there is a challenge as well when you look at the 20 or billion so that's gone in this year, but you then compare that to what has gone into China and what has gone into other areas. And I think China's currently sitting about $160 billion this year. So 20 billion is a significant amount of money, but it's not nearly anywhere near the amount of investment going into the likes of China. So there are perhaps challenges there, and you know, perhaps Vivek and Deepak can explore that as we chat further. I think just to close off this opening gambit, Michael, from an external perspective, there was a quote in The Economist a couple of months ago, which said multinationals love India more than it loves them. And I think there is at times a challenge on the perception of how business friendly India is to the external multinationals looking to come in. And I know there's been a recent pivot from Prime Minister Modi's Make in India platform to Make for the World platform. So I'll be interested on the perspective from India on how that is playing out to the global markets. And then just as a final point, Michael, we can't ignore COVID. There are some real challenges there for all countries, clearly, from an economic and a health perspective. But India has had the second biggest fall of any major economy in the second quarter. And clearly the impact that is having both now and maybe winding forward over the next 3 years would be difficult to ignore.
Great. Thanks for that, Rob. And that's obviously a kind of a view, if you like, from the outside looking in. Vivek, why don't we go to you next? And maybe from an Indian perspective, tell us a little bit about what you see happening in India.
Yeah. Thanks, Michael. Hi, everyone. Now, I will just try to add to what Rob just mentioned, and this is an inside-out look to the country, where it's been about 30 years now since the economy opened up in the early 90s. And in those 30 years, India established itself as a country which is known for its prowess in the IT sector, whether it's the processing, whether it's captive centers, Bangalore and Hyderabad. These are cities which are known globally for IT. What people haven't realized, or what people don't perceive India is as a manufacturing destination. That's something that just doesn't come to your mind because China has taken the entire limelight. But this is something we keep telling a lot of people we speak to, that India is already the number one manufacturer of two-wheelers. It's the number one when it comes to generic medicine. Everyone in the world is looking towards India for the production of the COVID vaccine just because the sheer infrastructure we have in the country. We're also the number two producer and consumer of mobile phones, number three in sugar, number four in car manufacturing in the world. So these are impressive figures, but the focus, the limelight goes to IT. So the government has taken a very deliberate step to focus, as Rob mentioned, on Make in India, Make for the World, where they're trying to make sure that the economy of India skip from agriculture straight to services, we don't miss out on the industrial part. And there is significant push by the government on policy reforms, on even tax for that matter. In fact, one of the most aggressive schemes that the government has come back with is by reducing corporate tax rate on fresh investment in manufacturing in the country. That makes Indian tax rates one of the most attractive in the world for people to invest in manufacturing in India afresh. And several policy reforms are being done to make sure that more and more people view India as a manufacturing location and don't just begin and end with China.
Great. And I think if we just pick up on that a little bit and maybe now go to you, Deepak. It's interesting, this comparison between India and China, which has obviously been around for a long time. But maybe you could talk about what international businesses, so non-Indian businesses, are already doing in India and how they view it. And maybe give us a little bit of introduction to your business.
Well, thanks, Michael. And hello, everyone. Vivek has given you a good perspective from the inside out. And Rob said about what is seen from outside. I'll try and give you a perspective both ways. But before that, let me explain a little bit about me and my company. I am an engineer, and I've graduated about 5 decades ago, so that's the level of experience I've accumulated within India and internationally. We have a JV. We set it up in 1980 with a US company, and this is in the field of industrial dehumidification, which gets us into almost every industry throughout the world. And we employ more than 1,500 people, and we are a medium-sized enterprise with 5 overseas subsidiaries and 10 international offices, and we export to about 85 countries. We are the second leading brand in our very specialized business. So our business is very niche business, so one gets a chance to be almost everywhere in the world. And I've been the president of Indo-American Chamber of Commerce, and I serve on the board of our premier chamber, PhD Chamber. Led many delegations overseas. Now coming back more specifically to the international businesses and what they are looking at and what are they already are in India. First, I'll start with what are the international businesses that are already present in India. Vivek has mentioned a pretty good list, but almost every type of high-end manufacturing is already set up in India. And there's tremendous room to grow, but the infrastructure is there, so you can see almost every field, from nuclear to electricals to turbines, even locomotives, so very high-end manufacturing. Automobile and component supply chain is extremely well-established. India has been investing a lot, both in the public sector and the private sector, in the defense and aerospace industry, general machinery, and in the recent years, in electronics and mobile phones, which is picking up extremely well in manufacturing in India. Also, India stands out in engineered and knowledge-based products, as opposed to products which require just repetitive cookie-cutting approach. Pharmaceuticals, India is already listed as a pharmacy to the world, and chemicals, and high-end pharma and chemicals. They are, again, extremely well-established. renewables, wind turbines. We are one of the largest producers of wind turbines in the world. And now PV is also getting to be produced in India, photovoltaic cells. And we are getting ready to be producing lithium-ion cells in India. Well, the list is endless. But what does an international business look at when coming to India? Or what should he look at? I think there are several ways to look at India. One is the domestic India demand. That's huge. Then the domestic demand plus the export opportunity. And the third item which people are looking at today is an alternate supply chain source. And fourth, what people should look at India or could look at India is the knowledge-based export of engineering goods and services. There are several international companies that have set up great engineering centers and research centers in India for their international companies, wherever they may be located, but they're headquartered in India from the research, development, engineering centers. And of course, the domestic services and logistics all offer an opportunity to anyone who's looking at India. But then when these companies look at India, they also want to evaluate India in terms of ease of doing business, which is very important. And I'll speak on that a little bit more later. And they look at infrastructure, roads, ports, and communication. I think Vivek touched on that. We have really started to make huge investments, and it is now beginning to show our investments in road infrastructure, ports, and communication. These will be within another 5 years, I think, at a high level of need being satisfied. Then companies look at, when they come to India, are the compliance requirements, legal, particularly IP. And in terms of legal and IP, India stands out as really top of the charts. We are very good in both those areas. The financial system is very mature. The human infrastructure, when they look at it, the managerial talent, the technical knowledge-based talent, and the skill sets are available to high-end work which anyone wants to look at. The other things that they look at where we are a little bit deficient are our labor laws. On the other hand, the positive side, what India offers when they look at India, is the political system and the stability and the openness of the system. There are, of course, drawbacks in many of these. These are some of the... Now, when it comes to geopolitics, and if this is going to affect where global developers or international investors will look at India, the answer is yes, yes, yes. This has become a center stage item, particularly in the last few months. Everyone's looking at all their businesses in geopolitical way. The geopolitical risks are forcing companies and countries to de-risk away from the dragon and look away from it, or building alternate supply chains as options to it. Several non-trade barriers are coming up against the dragon as we see. In the geopolitical side, if you look at the Ladakh standoff on the India North India border, and the South China Sea countries issue have very recently made all global investors to be very, very cautious of putting in more money in the dragon area. So in summary, I would say the main beneficiaries of what's happening in the geopolitical space will be India, Vietnam, Indonesia, Malaysia, Thailand. But out of all of them, India stands out for the following reasons. India offers a huge home market. And very importantly, India business language is English, which none of these countries have. And hugely improving infrastructure. We can see light in 5 years that it will have a good infrastructure, abundance of good human resources, and a good IP and legal system. However, India has to keep in mind that the investor coming in from outside is mobile. He has choices. India has to make itself attractive relative to others, mainly ease of doing business.
Interesting. And maybe we could jump to you, Vivek, as a sort of person on the ground in India, but talking to Rob and other colleagues from around the world about foreign businesses and how they perceive India. Is there a view on the cost of doing business in India? Is it a place that foreign companies want to come, not only to tap into the domestic market, but also, as we've been talking about, manufacture for the world? Can you just touch on that a little bit for us?
I would, and I'll just take a cue from what we just discussed with regard to ease of doing business in India. The government in India has taken a very serious view to make sure that this particular concern or challenge of an occupier or an investor is addressed sooner than later. So as a case in point, India was ranked 142 in 2014, and last year we were 63, with the government looking very seriously to make sure we come in the top 50. Now, that's a massive jump in a period of about 5-6 years. Yes, one could still argue that while the ease of doing business is doing well, maybe we need to focus now on the speed of doing business. And I guess that will be the focus of the government in the next year, once they cross 50 and they want to, you know, climb the ladder further. So that is something which has been a very positive move for everyone. Now, when it comes to cost, we already know in the size of the labor pool in India. But most people don't realize that a lot of it is extremely attractive in terms of cost. We are probably the most cheap, the cheapest labor pool, not just the largest, but even the cheapest labor pool, compared to China, which over the past 10, 20, 30 years has ended up increasing their salaries, increased their per capita incomes. And because of that, they are not exactly the most attractive proposition. So one is able to look at a massive labor pool to tap into, which is the reason why a lot of IT companies had come to India. Similar potential is available for the manufacturing firms, which is going to be extremely attractive from a cost perspective. Another thing which is happening very silently and simultaneously is massive investments on the warehousing logistics space as well. While manufacturing is what the government is pushing for, there is a very silent private investment taking place on building the facilitation centers for Amazon and the likes and their competitors. And that infrastructure, real estate and otherwise, across India is now coming up where we are seeing development of massive grade A warehouses in all key cities across the country. In fact, in the next 5 years, the inventory for grade A warehouses in the country will probably more than double. That's the amount of money that has got invested in building warehouses across all key locations of the country. So that not many people are talking about, because that is focused on India's internal consumption. It doesn't really bother what's happening in terms of, you know, exports and imports. This is just focusing on India as a consumption center, and that's driving massive investments in building a warehousing asset class across the country.
And let me just jump in there for a second. Is the real estate part of that, the ownership and the development, is that a purely Indian play, or are the overseas money coming in to drive that whole, let's call it the e-commerce movement?
Yeah. So here is an interesting bit. And let's try to draw a parallel between office real estate and warehousing. Right now, the largest office landlord in the country, in India, is Blackstone, followed by Brookfield being a close second or third. That happened over a period of time where a lot of Indian developers constructed massive IT parks across the country, and Blackstone came in and picked up, built up assets. Now, in warehousing, it's slightly different. We already have massive investments from CPPIB, from Warburg Pincus, from of course, Blackstone, and people like Essenda, the Nisha and Redbook out of the Asia Pac region, or the Logos. All these people have already got platforms which are acquiring land and constructing grade A warehouses, or are in the process of investing in those platforms. Funnily enough, out of, let's say, from 2012 to 2019, in India, platforms were announced above for about 16.6 billion. That's the total. That includes office, retail, residential, all platforms in real estate. 16.6 billion. 33% of that was to go into warehousing logistics. That's one third of the platforms being announced in India were for warehousing specifically. So global capital did not want to miss out on the boom in warehousing, where they almost missed it in commercial real estate. They've picked up built-up assets. Here, they want to invest in greenfield and brownfield as well.
Interesting. So you're saying that the Indian owner-developer is very much at the forefront of the real estate part of the whole e-commerce boom that is obviously happening.
They are, and they are being strongly supported by foreign capital.
Right. Interesting. And so, Deepak, if we kind of flip back to you, and maybe for the next few minutes, I'd be really interested with that kind of backdrop as to what you said earlier and what Vivek's been talking about, is where do you think India is headed in the next 5 to 10 years in terms of the development of the economy being open, more open if that's necessary to not only foreign investment, but also foreign companies coming in and tapping into the wealth that is clearly there in India right now?
Okay, I'm very optimistic on that, and I'll sort of give you some inputs. Rather, I'm extremely optimistic. Look at about our ecosystem and compare it in terms of what it needs to be and where we are at. And for that, I'd like to make a very quick parallel with China. All this in India must be understood in the context of China opening up in the early 80s and India in 1991. A good decade or 10 years later. If data points are to be compared with a 10-year lag, most of India data points are tracking those of China, but with a decade later. The greatest economic strength and affluence of China has been most visible only in the last decade. So if we were to extrapolate that, even though we have slipped back by a few years, the next 10 to 12 years should and will expect to be where China is today. So India offers a huge opportunity in the context of what you'll see here, what China has been seen doing in the last 10 years only. And that's very big. With investors, small or big, whether those that missed the bus going to China, or whether they were disillusioned with their investment in China, whether they are looking at alternate supply chains, or whether they are looking at alternate huge domestic market, with an eye on the future, the investor will find India a destination impossible to ignore. And while the India government is conscious of improving the ease of business index, as Vivek has mentioned, the reforms and the progress has been rather slow. Recently, the government of India reduced the corporate tax structure, which is very attractive indeed, and have also implemented this month, which may not be fully understood or known to the world, a faceless tax regime. And yet we feel domestically that there are miles to go. So for a world-class ecosystem, the progress that we still have to make is in the area of ease of doing business, labor reforms, and a tax-friendly regime. Tax-friendly should not be confused with the fact that our tax rates are lower and we have moved to a faceless tax regime. So I think these three areas, as Vivek also mentioned, government is conscious. We hope that steady but strong progress will be made. But I see these as three areas which will make, amongst other things, India a very strong destination. And it is attractive. The opportunity is going to be huge in the next 5 and 10 years.
Yeah, interesting. And I think maybe we can pull out, and Rob, I'm going to come to you maybe to sort of wrap this up. But there's obviously a lot of geopolitical tension. There's a lot of issues with China right now, which I don't think any of us see going away anytime soon. And we spent the last 20 minutes talking about the huge opportunity that is India. Both for the domestic market, but also for, if you like, the foreign market. Are you seeing the sort of types of clients and investors that you deal with globally looking at India on a par with China and other places to invest, or do they see it as a bigger opportunity? Where's the sense of India from an international non-Indian point of view?
Yeah, really interesting point, Michael, and Deepak touched upon the ease of doing business. And I think there's two areas relating specifically to real estate, actually, where India performs really, really well. Issuing construction permits and actually access to power, it is ranking 27 and 22 in the global table. So from some real estate sort of dynamics, if you like, there really is an accelerated ease of doing business. I think the other point to pick up on, particularly, well, both from an occupier and investor perspective, is the renewable energy campaign and the ESG criteria, which I touched on right at the beginning. It's not to be underestimated. And India has one of the biggest sort of national campaigns for renewable energy. And in the world where compliance and sustainability is quite rightly so important, I think India is positioned extremely well moving forward. And I think, Michael, just as a final point, I think when I read that Prime Minister Modi has an approval rating of 78% or something of that order in India, most leaders in the world would crave for that sort of popularity. He has been going and reaching out to the major economy. So since he was re-elected earlier this year, he's actually met face-to-face the leaders of US, China, Russia, Japan, France, Germany, and the UK. So he really is trying to get the message out, which Deepak and Vivek have really talked about throughout the last half an hour or so, of India is very much open for business. And just to give a bit of evidence to that, just to close out, Michael, I mean, the likes of Walmart, Deepak was talking about e-commerce earlier, you know, they've taken a controlling stake in Flipkart in the e-commerce world. Amazon have been referenced with their investment there as well. So the huge multinationals who are putting significant dollars into the Indian economy.
Great. Okay. Thanks for that, Rob. And Vivek and Deepak, thanks very much for your comments. I'm going to kind of wrap it up there. It seems from everything you've said that there's this amazing opportunity, which is ongoing. We've got, you know, stability in government, as Rob has just pointed out, a lot of international interest in investing in India, which every country in the world needs. And it only seems to me that India is going to go from some strength to strength, and the rest of the world's going to have to watch as things progress. So best of luck with all of that, most importantly, and thanks very much for your time today.
Thank you.
Thanks, Michael.